It is finally here, PLL Championship Weekend, and we are back for another edition of the PLL Happy Hour. I'm Matt Kinnear, joined by Kevin Brown, Dan Kaplan, and our guest today is Kyle Devitt from the New England Lacrosse Journal. Kyle, welcome back to the podcast. Kevin's cracking one up.
Wow.
We're recording this during the day, so Kevin's revealing his true self here with that natural light. No, I've got one too, so no worries, Kev.
If you're gonna crack the can it not be Natty Light when you crack the can like that?
Celebrate right next to the mic.
I watched you do it. I was like, is he gonna do that? He did it. Okay.
Hey, broke man's budget.
Now, is anything happening in pro lacrosse this week? Anything at all? Anything interesting?
I think something.
I don't know.
Just getting ready for the championship this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, the championship chaos versus Whipsnakes. A three-peat possible for the Whipsnakes. Revenge possible for chaos. And middle of this week, the biggest retirement in pro lacrosse history as Paul Rabel announced his retirement. And I got to go to Paul's ceremony that he had announcing his retirement down at Audi Field. And, it was time in terms of what was right for Paul. It was time in terms of what is right for the league. Obviously, the league got a lot of publicity from, you know, Paul's story of midfielder turned executive. And, now it's kind of for him to focus on the logistics of the PLL and let things run its course and let the new generation take over. Kyle, you've covered Paul the longest out of anyone here, between college, MLL, and PLL. What's your main thought with Paul retiring?
He's the most impactful player in the history of the sport. In terms of advancing the professional game, in terms of being a true superstar his entire career. Like, people forget, like, last year, the PLL brought in so many new fans that I don't think any of them appreciate. I'm not trying to cast shade, but I'm going to do it anyway. Like, all of you came in here and you're all new and you're like, the Paul Rabel is supposed to be good. And he had like a bad shooting season in 2020. Like, even he will acknowledge that. And then he like has a season that he should have this year. And people are like, oh, wow, Paul Rabel's good. And it's like, what are you doing? Where have you been? And I understand there's a lot of that like going around, right? But if it's possible, find a highlight of Rabel before 2014 and from college or pro, and watch what he does with the ball. Watch how he shoots the ball. Like, before he had any injuries to his foot or shoulders or any other part of his legs, like, he was truly the most unstoppable force that professional lacrosse has ever seen that didn't have the name Powell on the back of their jersey. That is just it's not even disputable. Like, come find me in the street. Not disputable. I saw it with my own eyes. I watched him jump over the car myself. I was there. Okay? Like, these are things that are, and I hate that this word is used so often now, but iconic. That is a word that applies to Paul Rabel now and forever.
Kevin, your thoughts?
Yeah, selfishly, I would like to have seen him continue on at least a few more seasons. Just because, like, even that 2014 highlight tape was awesome. That's like, so he comes out of college, he's still like a scorer on the run kind of guy. Then you kind of see him, his evolution as a passer, and he's bringing out all these like behind the back passes, one-handed skip passes. The him in a Cannons jersey from like 2010 to 2014 with those baggy shorts and his like big flow was just the formative years of my love for Rabel on the field. So selfishly, I would have loved to see him the next step in his evolution. I think he's obviously athletic enough to continue playing for at least a few more seasons. You can stick him down on attack, put him on the crease, big body, whatever. I mean, he can play for a bunch more years doing that. but just playing the way he did downhill dodging this year, I think he wanted to show that he still had it, and he definitely did. But yeah, thanks to him for everything he did for the game. So it was kind of disappointing for selfishly for me to see him retire.
Dan.
Yeah, I don't know that I have anything super groundbreaking. I guess what I'll do is I'll pose a question to the group. What do you think his legacy goes down as? More of a, you know, pioneer industry leader, you know, created this league and totally transformed what was the MLL and created this better version? Or does it go down as this just incredible player, you know, league leader and professional points and all that? Where do you guys land on that question?
Well, I think his, you know, his legacy hasn't been written yet, I think is the important part, in the sense that what ultimately his legacy is, it's what's going to be, what is happening in the sport 10 years from now. Because Paul is going to be, you know, whatever that is, he's going to be a big part of that, whether it's the PLL or the Olympic movement, which, you know, I know he intends to have a role in that as well. So I think his legacy is unwritten at this point. But I definitely think it's off the field, you know, what he's been able to accomplish in terms of growing the sport, you know, in whichever direction you want to take that. Because, you know, you can argue who was better. Was John Grant Jr. better than Paul Rabil? You can argue that. You know, is Casey Powell better? You know, those arguments, you can definitely have that argument, and it's a subjective thing. You cannot argue who was the biggest mainstream star from lacrosse. That's Paul Rabil. Without a doubt, he is head and shoulders above every single person to have ever picked up a stick in that regard. So, you know, that's definitely the area in which his legacy will be, more so than his playing, which, you know, is a huge legacy in its own right. You know, why do you think Brian Costabile plays the way he does? You know, why do you think so many players act the way they do on the field? It's because of Paul Rabil. But the way that he was able to cross over into the mainstream, and whatever that manifests itself into the growth of the sport down the line, is where Paul's legacy is ultimately going to arise.
I think it varies person to person too, right? You know, for me, my career is Paul Rabil's career, like it was Kyle Harrison's career. You know, I came up with him. I did one of his first interviews that was, you know, got some pop. You know, that's one of the things that, you know, he's greatly impacted my life personally. I am indebted to Paul Rabil 100%. And I told him as such. You know, I'm thankful for everything he's done in terms of that. And I can separate the different Paul Rabils. And I think that history won't do that. And that's okay. But in the moment, you know, I remember him as different people. You know, I remember him as a college player, a pro player, a player that, you know, put trust in me and I put trust in and impacted my life. And then also as the guy who further impacted my life by creating a higher profile professional league, which is where I got my start and where I, you know, the bulk of my work is located, right? Like that's my quote unquote specialty. And now I get to do all sorts of stuff because I built that foundation with him, with IL, with all these other people. He's a hugely intrinsic piece of lacrosse media, as well as on field and advancing the professional game. And I think that's kind of where we can look at him too. Like there is a separation. You can cut, you know, you can't cut a person into pieces, but like you can cut his career up into little chunks and like look at them differently and be like, how did one person do this, 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 and this? And that I think is the overarching thing that we all have to look at when we look at Paul Rabil. And like Matt said, we're not done. He didn't I think when like he retired, everyone on Twitter, it was like, they're acting like he died. It's like, he's not dead. He's not going to play pro lacrosse. He's going to keep doing what everything else he was doing, except this thing. And that's a big thing, but his impact is still felt and will be felt for decades to come.
One little anecdote just about, you know, his impact on media. Obviously, YouTube, when he started, was, you know, not what YouTube is the most powerful force in you know, in terms of how people consume media right now. And we did a video of Paul making a burrito at Chipotle at our office that we got so many comments, like, I can't believe you're wasting your time on this. But it was our most viewed video for a really, really long time. And that just showed you, like, the power that, like, he had. And, like, I think that was his idea. I'm pretty sure it was his idea. He knows what is going to be popular. You know, he has an eye for that that was way ahead of its time and is part of why he's been on the cutting edge of so many things that happen in media.
Did he get extra guac? You remember?
If I remember, I think he loaded up on steak to a point where the burrito didn't wrap properly. But and I also think he got like some sort of burrito for life card, if I remember, for doing that. But anyway, that was the big news that happened midweek. And we don't want to take away from what's happening this weekend because we've got a champion to crown. We've got the rematch, Chaos versus Whipsnakes. Whipsnakes going for dynasty status. I think three in a row is a pretty good marker of what a dynasty is. Three-peat. And, you know, this is a game that even though it's a rematch, I don't think anyone would have predicted that this was going to be the matchup, particularly when you were, you know, maybe week four or five in this season and the Chaos were looking like the Chaos were looking. This did not seem like an option for the championship matchup. But I guess just overall thoughts on this game, and Kyle, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I don't see it as a rematch, really. And, you know, I interviewed Andy Towers on the Chasing the Gold podcast this week, and he was like, there's eight players in this team from last season. That's it. You know, it's a point he reiterated in the pregame pressers yesterday as well. So I think that they're looking at it as they have nothing left to lose. And as far as the Whipsnakes, as far as I'm concerned, the Whipsnakes are already a dynasty, even if they lose. Honestly, I actually believe that. And I think that's like one of the weird narratives that no one's talked about is, you know, obviously they weren't as dominant and have been less dominant than they've ever been, right? They're more vulnerable than they've ever been. The Chaos are more probably pumped up than they've ever been. So I think we might be in store for a truly electric final, which is what we all so richly, richly deserve.
Yeah, it's going to be epic. Right now, I would say they're like on par with like the Philadelphia Barrage dynasty, maybe. They won two in a row. Think they went to the title game the next year and lost.
Yep.
And then this is kind of, if the Whips lose, it'll be like the same scenario. But if they win, they're like the best dynasty there ever was.
Yeah. Ironically, Andy Towers. Yeah. Yes, that too. We can't leave out the indoor people. They get upset. Andy Towers was not on those Barrage teams. He was on the Barrage teams that were terrible.
The 1-11 ones?
Pulling the car around, drawing a parallel. I'm sorry. I didn't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I like it. But yeah, to your point about Towers doubling down on this isn't the same roster as last year. Like everyone is not everyone, but there's kind of this narrative that he had this whole plan to double down on indoor players, box lacrosse players. And I was like a part of that narrative. I thought the same thing with his offseason trades and offseason draft selections. But talking to him the other day for this Dane Smith feature I just wrote, it's more of like he was not forced into it, but there's injuries to start the season. Eric Scott couldn't go. Sergio Salcido is injured. Didn't end up being the right fit this season, at least. And then Jake Furcaro, he's been in and out of the lineup. And then after kind of that 4th of July showing, they went with more of the Canadian guys. And then come was the regular season finale against the Archers, he had another poor showing. So it's not that he's doubled down on it, more so that he's found the right personnel and found his identity around the box players.
Yeah, and, you know, it's I remember you had the note that it was going to be an American line and a Canadian line for his midfield, and that was kind of the original idea. That didn't happen. But, you know, I still think that, like, you know, as much as we're saying, like, all this team's very different, it's still the same identity. Like, I feel like the identity of the Chaos is the same as the identity of the Chaos in 2020. Personnel might be different.
Or even 2019 of, like, yeah. We saw in the semifinals, at least, of transition ball, Blaze getting it out fast, and they're at their best when they're creating chaos and scoring in transition.
Because it's still a team that's built around Blaze. By, you know, so that, like, is kind of a giant piece of that puzzle that remains consistent and has only gotten better. Dan, I wanted to turn it over to you. What is the key, you know, whether it's individual matchup or area of the field, what is the key schematic part to this game that you're watching that's going to determine the outcome?
I'm really interested in the face-off. Adler and Nardella, I think, is going to be really, really interesting. It did not go very well the first time they played, but that was, I think it was all the way back in the, like, early June.
Week one.
Yeah, week one? All right, yep. So very early in the season. And I think Adler only went 30%. Nardella dominated that matchup. And what we've seen recently is that when the Chaos can generate enough possessions, they've found ways to find the back of the net, whether it's in transition or, you know, whatever it is, they've found ways to find the back of the net. They're such an anomaly. I was texting this week getting ready to put together some thoughts for a preview with a current PLL player and was asking him about the Chaos. And he was like, they're so odd. Every time you think that they're down and out, especially come playoffs, like, here comes the resurgence. And then he brought up the stretch out of halftime when, you know, you think that because of the way that Atlas finished that semifinal game or going into half, you think that, like, all right, they're back up, they've settled in. And then, boom, out of nowhere, they go on that run and that game ends up, you know, kind of a blowout. And that's just one of these teams that's kind of an anomaly. They're kind of unpredictable. And so if you can do some of those things, taking care of transition, and if Adler can generate enough possessions for them, I could see a way that they can pull it out.
Yeah, you have to score on them in transition, and you have to stop their transition, and you also have to get 2-3 pass looks against Blaze. You can't get a 1 pass look against Blaze and expect it to go in. And that's why and not only will it not go in, he'll save it, pull it over the top, and now you've created a transition opportunity against yourself. So the key for the Whipsnakes to beating the Chaos is killing their transition and getting 2 or 3 pass looks to make Blaze move to make the save. If you just drive down the alley and shoot on Blaze, it is not going in. And not only is it not going in, it's getting saved. That's a problem. That's a turnover, right? So that's the thing, the Whipsnakes. And it's funny because, like, everyone's talking about what the Chaos have to do. We know what they're going to do. We know what they have to do. But the Whipsnakes, you know, they have to change what they're doing. They have to change their game plan. They have to get better looks against this Chaos team if they want to win.
I would say the Whips, more than, like, any other team, are probably the best stopping transition. Like, they sub off, they get their punt offense going and just give it to the Rambo or Zed, or they get back in the hole. I think they're one of the more disciplined teams in that area, at least.
They have midfielders who can stay on there, too.
Yeah, I think that's true the last couple weeks. But we saw there when they lost those games at the end of the regular season where they were that short state, that rope unit was bad. I'm going to go so far as to say it was bad. We saw guys getting burned for game winners, you know, and you know, I actually asked Staggs about this in the presser, and he was visibly annoyed, which obviously I loved. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, we're doing better. We just have to find ways to support those guys. And I think that that's what they're going to be looking to do, because the Chaos, when in their settled sets, are looking for the opposite of what the Whipsnakes need to score against them. The Chaos are looking for 1-2 pass looks off of doubles, slips, picks, rollbacks, all that. That's like how their entire offense runs.
Now, with the point about the face-offs, Dan, you know, Adler and Nardella, they've trained together a ton. So, you know, there's that aspect of, you know, familiarity, like, kind of makes a little bit of unpredictability when you've gone against someone that many times.
Totally. It was also Adler's first. It was also Adler's first PLL game, so the tighter wings.
You know, he's only gotten better.
All that type of stuff would be.
Yeah, he's only gotten better since then. The wings.
Yeah.
You know, they figured out their wing play better since then. So, you know, how close it's going to get, I'm not sure, but I feel like you can almost guarantee it's going to be closer than it was that first time.
Absolutely.
I think if you're going to write down a guarantee, I think that's one of them.
Can you, though? Can you account for Zed's going off for six straight goals in the third?
Well, the face-off.
I think he means the face-off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got ahead of myself. I thought you just meant the game in general. But yeah, I think the face-off should definitely be closer.
Kevin, that's my next point is, did nobody realize that last year Zed got in amazing shape and is like about as physically dominant as Matt Rambo? Because I feel like everyone talks about Rambo's size, but Zed Williams is a freaking beast. Like, he can just physically annihilate people. And that's why he's so much better than he was when he was at Virginia, you know, outside of the, like, where he's playing on the field, so to speak. But I was just rewatching some of the games, and he's just physically dominant. No one, like, realizes it until they're playing against him, and then they realize it in the worst possible moment.
Yeah, I think Rowlett was talking about
that championship game.
Yeah, Rowlett was talking about that yesterday, how he, like, you know, I got dragged. I was on highlights a lot, and Zed's goals were against me a lot, and I don't want that to happen again, you know? So I think that's definitely something to look at. And physically, you know, the guy that's the most dangerous is the guy that's not as physical, and it's Jay Carlson. Like, how do you account for Jay Carlson, the ultimate X-factor attackman, off ball? This guy's a genius. Just, he scores off of, like, it looks so lucky. Like, some of his goals, if you did it, all of his goals, and you looked at him, you'd pick out six where you're like, that's the luckiest thing I've ever seen. Like, because he catches it off a rebound or off of someone's helmet, or it's a pass that wasn't for him, but he's still in the right spot to put it in. That is unaccountable. And that's the one thing I think the Chaos don't have any way of accounting for that. Nor do they have a way to split. I mean, Newman and Rowlett, if you're looking at guys that can be physical and guard physical guys, those are two great options. And so is Johnny Cervic. So those, in that regard, they're prepared, but the execution of it is really what's going to matter. And whether or not the Whipsnakes can, you know, manufacture really good looks for all three of those guys.
So that leads me to one thing that, like, I have definitely been going back and forth about as I've been preparing for this preview. If you're the Chaos and you beat the Archers while short sticking Will Manny and held him to one goal, and then you go into the Atlas game and you double short stick Caraway and Law, do you come into this Whipsnakes game and short stick Jay Carlson?
Probably. Honestly, yeah. I think you probably would. I don't think it's, like, as cut and dry as those other ones, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, the Caraway one's the one that was kind of head-scratching to me, but it worked because he just did it. Well, they also shut him. So it wasn't that they were just shorting him. They were shutting him. So, like, you can't shut Carlson. He's too experienced. Like, that's a thing that can happen to a young player when they're in a situation like that and you're being shut by a guy who's just as big and fast as you do. When in college, you're shut by a shorty and the shorties aren't. So, you know, in the pros, it's different. But I don't think you can shut Carlson. Then you can guard him with a shorty if you want, but it better be your best shorty. And then what are you doing with the pole? I don't know. That's the real question. I think it's a great matchup key in if we're looking for
points. My prediction would be that they do that. At least they try to start, and they put a short stick down, and then they're going to bump Cerdic up so that he has just a little bit of length up in the middle of the field. I don't know who they put him on. I guess – probably.
I mean, shutting down Brad Smith would be kind of a good plan.
Yeah, Brad Smith will get the first one. Brad Smith will get, you know, whoever they roll out, whether it's Ray or Costabile. And then Cerdic will take on, you know, whether it's Channy or Haas or whoever. I don't know. But I think that's what they do to start. And then you get Rowlett on Rambo and you get Newman ahead. But I struggle to think that you're going to be able to get away with short sticking Jay Carlson.
Yeah, agree.
Sorry, one second.
Also been lethal on short sticks while Matt catches your breath over there. But like the stat Keegs put out, Joe Keegan on the invert rate from him on the whips versus the Chrome there was pretty remarkable. I forget the exact numbers, but that's another option, you know?
Yeah, and he's also going to go and set picks in these like really tight locations to the goal where if your short stick hedges too far and now they have to throw back to Jay Carlson, like in these tight situations, we've seen it already happen. It's how a couple of these weird goals where you've seen him like catching the ball with his back to the goal, but getting hit from behind and like bobbling it, but somehow catching it and turning and shooting. Like that's how a couple of those have happened, is because either Zed or Rambo has come and dodged upfield while he set a pick at GLE and the short stick guarding Jay follows too far up the field. So now when you're throwing back to him, somebody has to fill or he's able to just turn the corner. And there's been good stuff that has happened from it. Like, I think it's really dangerous. And so even if he doesn't just take the ball from X and like go behind and go at you, he's definitely going to be able to make you pay setting picks and, you know, working with those other two.
Those are called razor picks. And I'm only telling you that because if Joe Keegan was here, he would make sure that you called them razor picks.
I thought the angle of the dodge had to be more like.
Perfect. Yeah, it's usually used on GLE though. That's like where it was like popularized with Jordan Wolfe. And I'm just sticking up for my dude. Cause like, that's his like,
what the difference that's his razor picks and slam picks are.
Yeah. I just know what a razor pick is. I don't know enough about anything else.
Well, right now I'll call them North South dodges off of picks from GLE initiated from X.
He finally explained, cause I wasn't sure what the Spain pick and roll was either. And cause I've seen that the chaos clip a bunch when Dane's skipping it to O'Keefe. I was like, what is this? What is a Spain PNR? What is that?
But Spain triangle.
He gave the explanation. I was like, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a hoops
pick order. Picker.
Yeah, it's funny because like this whole game, we're talking about it. We're barely talking about offensive players. We're just talking about what they're going to do. But defensively is where this game is won and lost, right?
Well, that was the question I was going to ask is, and it's not necessarily specific to this matchup, but like, why is the chaos defense so much better than it was in week 4, you know, weeks 1 through 5? It seems like it is. Am I wrong? But like, why is it so much better?
I mean, it is because there is more trust and more support, which is what makes every defense good, right? Like the key to making your defense better is everyone usually says communication. Right? Any level. It's like, oh, well, we have to communicate better. We'll be better. Maybe you just suck. That's not necessarily going to help you all the time, right? The thing that does help is supporting, knowing when to slide, knowing when to hedge, knowing when to not send a guy is what makes you great, and trusting your matchup and knowing which matchup is the problem matchup, especially in pro, because there's not enough time. That's the biggest difference, is the time to slide and the time not to slide is actually infinitesimally harder to quantify from college to pro. That's the biggest difference. And that's why offensive players are fine, right? Offensive player, you see guys, Jeff Teat makes the jump this year. Jeff Teat's elite at college. He's elite in the pro. He's up for an MVP because he's an offensive player. How many defensive players are in there? Blaze, I guess, goalie.
Danny Logan.
But yeah, Danny Logan. But I mean, that I'm talking long pole, 6-on-6 defense. That is where everything is different. And the thing with the chaos is not only is their communication better, obviously I made fun of that, but the trust and ability to hedge and not hedge is as good as the Whipsnakes have been to this point. And it's not a coincidence that the two best defenses playing at their best are in the championship game.
Well, and I mean, there's Blaze. Don't forget
that. Right. And the defense is, you know, Blaze would say this too. I think he has in interviews. Like, he gives credit to his defense because they alter shots. Like, that's one of the other things too, is like, how many uncontested shots does Blaze save? Not a lot, because the defense doesn't allow a lot of them. You know, like, he gets sticks on hands. That's what they do.
I talked to a guy this week, a pro, who I consider one of the best shooters in the league. And he said, man, this Blaze thing is real, man. That was his reaction about the chaos. Just like, he is the most difficult goalie to shoot against, without a doubt. And that, you know, in my mind solidified, you know, my thoughts on Blaze as kind of MVP. It sounds silly to say because it's almost cliche and it's so obvious, but if there's going to be one player who absolutely steals the game, it's going to be him.
Yeah. I think when Blaze started too, Blaze has been a pro for a while. People forget. He got drafted really low in the MLL because he couldn't get down on shots. Period.
He was behind Galloway for his first few years, right?
Oh, yeah. And he was never close to getting in. There was other guys in front of him even because he couldn't get down on the shots. And now you see he's, you know, it's not just people like, oh, he trimmed down so he's better. No, he's more flexible. He's quicker. His hands are better. He doesn't just take the angle and kill the pipe, right? Like, he takes the first step out. And his step is not huge. That's the thing that, like, is that I've seen just in terms of, like, you know, analyzing goalies. His step is not big, but it's so quick, and it's diagonal, and it's sideways, and it's any direction you can think of. His lateral speed is, I don't think I've seen anything like it for a long time. Like, he's been incredible in terms of using his size, hand speed, foot speed, and reading an angle of a shot to make saves. And one of the reasons that people picked against Chaos, myself included, all the time, is because I was like, well, if Blaze doesn't make 15 saves, they're losing. Except turns he out. Done it. He did it in every game. How do you do that? You can't. That's unprecedented in professional outdoor lacrosse. That is unprecedented. And that's why he should be, you know, this is a little outdated, and we'll go into it, but I think he should be the MVP just for that. Right?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely, you know, I think, like you said, like, that question of, like, well, the only reason they're winning is because he keeps bailing them out. But that's right. Like, I mean, it's like gravity. It's going to happen. There's no doubt about it. Like, you can just count on that. The same way that you could count for Baptiste being, at the very least, over 50%, but probably over 60, is the same way that you can account for Blaze making 15 saves, but there's a very strong possibility he's going to make over 20.
And to your point, when you were talking to the pro player you were talking to this week, Matt, like, if you're already in the shooters' heads before the games, then you've won.
Yep.
Like, people don't think they're going to score even when they have, like, good open looks against Blaze. And, I mean, that's because of his track record. He's going to save it.
Yeah. I can very vividly recall Ryan Ambler missing one wide, where I was like sitting there like, I can't believe he just missed the cage from that spot on the field with hands free, no one near him. And it was 1,000%. If any other goalie's in there, like, he's just hitting that thing low and away.
If you're not hitting the corner, then.
Right. And he just feels like he has to put the ball so deep in the corner that, you know, you miss a little bit wide. And then an awesome opportunity becomes something that Blaze never even needed to make a save on. And then we also need to get a Joe Keegan, like, advanced statistic on exactly how many saves have turned into goals the other way for him. Whether it's, you know, him throwing it directly to an outlet that, and, like, is sparking a fast break, or him just hitting a pole that then hits a two. I'd love to know the actual number of what that is.
Well, that DraftKings prop bet on Reardon, what is it, 0.5 points, and what are the odds that it's
plus 450 over half a point, or under is minus 750.
I'm hammering that. Make some money. He's gonna have an assist.
It's almost as good as, I mean, it's better odds than the Rambo assist last week for the semis, which was wait a minute.
What was that?
Rambo just has to get one assist and you can make money? Where's my house? I don't have a house. Where's your house? I will bet your house.
He has in this economy.
I mean, I will.
Can't afford not to bet it.
Oh, the DK Sportsbook just handing out money, huh?
Listen, I went on that, riding the line thing, and I just ranted for, I think, 5 minutes. I was like, I'll bet my hand. I'll bet my fingers. Like, do I have to use money?
I'm all in.
You know, like, they were just
all
like.
All in with what, Kyle?
I'm all in with anything you got. Anything you got. I don't know if I feel that strongly about the Blaze prop, but it's certainly the most fun. And you know that Blaze knows that that's a prop. So, you know, like, every time, any lane he sees, he's going to run it up and, you know, so many people are going to go, I'm like, hold their breath and wait for him to cross the midline maybe. And then he'll just pass it off and probably walks back.
These assists, he hasn't crossed the midfield line yet this season.
Yeah, no, I think like he'll pass it right before. And like, maybe that guy shoots it just to like, be like, come on, dude. It's making people some money. I don't know.
That's what makes this bet awesome is it is like whatever the play that happens that makes it is going to be an exciting play. So it's definitely one you can jump out of your seat and like be really pumped that you just won $500 and it was awesome in the way that it happened. But then I'm just worried that it's going to be like a, you know, Lyle Thompson 400th point situation or like whatever he did to break out his record.
I was there.
Is it not an assist? Are they going to give it to him? Did he make a lacrosse like move? You know, what was his, what did he do after he accepted the pass? Did he get in all that stuff? And they're going to like award it and then cancel it after the game and then take the money back.
Yeah. That's like my moat. That's like where I formed an anxiety disorder in the truck at Bryant, whether or not Lyle had the game breaking assist.
It's the root
of all my anxiety is just like, and then like the whole truck turning to me and being like, was that an assist? And I'm like, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Give it to him. You got to give it to him.
Give it.
Cause it was,
I think I argued that it might not be. And then everyone kind of looked at me. I was like, no, just kidding. It is.
Shut up, Kyle.
Shut up, Kyle. Yeah.
It was a pump fake, right? After the pass.
Yeah, well, it was like three fakes on the crease. But would he have gotten that pass in that situation had Lyle not made the pass was the question. I was like, no, assist. And they were like, okay. I just remember it being kind of anticlimactic, but for like half a second, my whole like everything like froze. It was like bullet time. And I'm in the truck in this like trailer on the side because it wasn't even Bryant's main field. It was like their side field that game happened on. That's why it wasn't televised, right?
No, because I remember being – we're going way on a tangent here, but it's funny.
It's fine.
I remember sitting in my kitchen table watching it on my laptop, prepared for Lyle to – now, was that the one that broke it or the one that tied it?
I think that he tied and broke it in the same game.
Yeah, but the point we're talking about, I think, was
the break it. Yes, yes.
So, but there was no – it was like, you know, I was ready. I had the clip ready to send out on our Instagram and our Twitter account, and I had the tweet ready. But there was a good 5 minutes before there was any sort of acknowledgement of, like, that point, whether it was real or not.
Yep.
So I just sat there, and it was one of those really bad live streams that's, like, you know, a mile away, and it was not their primary field, like you said. So right. I was like, wow, this is not the, like
– And it was at night.
That I expected it to be.
Yeah, and it was at night.
It was, like, a Tuesday or Wednesday night game.
Yep.
That was one of the great moments in lacrosse history.
Oh, wait, let's tie it back. Let's tie it back. Blaze Reardon was the goalie in that game.
Yes, he was.
Got it.
There you go. Also, good segue. I was just looking up. So I thought he had more assists. He only had three assists for the year. Two of them came. I guess this is only regular season, though. So,
but it's
– they don't have
to in the playoffs, though.
So, you think it's gotten the two from last week?
Did he?
Two last week.
Yeah, two against Atlas.
Yeah.
Oh, the over the top.
However many second assists there were.
Yeah.
Yeah, but before
there should be at least a little level of like, I might lose my house. You know, it's not fun if you've
sure, done it. Sure. Unless it's Matt Rambo getting an assist.
Now let's talk about the other end of the field, because we haven't talked about the Chaos offense at all. We've talked about the Chaos offense basically through the lens of Blaze, but not through actually any of the players. Now, I think it's fair to say their offense wasn't great for half of that game, or at least a quarter and a half of the game against the Atlas. They did Chaos things, you know, there's good Chaos and there's bad Chaos, and they did bad Chaos things for at least a pretty decent stretch of that game. But
the whole second quarter.
Yeah, the whole second quarter. You know, and then there's a point in the game where it just kind of, I don't know, completely devolved into just like a little bit of just slop on both ends. But Dane Smith, why is he so good? And I know that's a very simple question, but he's a box player. He has very little field experience. But he's been the biggest impact player on that offense for the last several weeks right now. What makes him so good?
Yeah, back-to-back six-point performances. His hands are so good. He's the most accurate guy in the league, passing and shooting, I think. I don't think he was in the – he was telling me he's coming for Marcus Holman's throne with the accuracy shootout for the next All-Star game. So, Marcus, watch out. First step, very good. Big, he can barrel you over, or he can tuck it in inside roll. He's got the whole arsenal. He's just a guy who, like, he's not gonna insert himself to be like, hey, I'm the guy giving the ball, I'm gonna go get my runs before you. And that was especially the case his first two seasons with the Chaos. They sit Connor Fields after going 0-4 in the pool play last year. He comes out with a 6-point performance in their the quarterfinal game against Chrome 2020. And then ever since then, he's carried that confidence into this season, knowing he can produce like that at the field level.
Now, yes, I mean, he's got the skill set. It's just a matter of, you know, I guess finding his place on the field. And I mean that quite literally, of like being in the small box and being on the field. Like it's very confusing where you space yourself on the field and just your comfort level about where you roam around. Now, how do you defend the Chaos offense? And particularly, what do you do in terms of the matchup with him? Who's the best guy that can handle that combination of size, feeding ability, his first step? And I think it's a combination of his just speed, but also his size and his ability to use that to kind of gain separation on the first step. There's not a lot of guys who you can really throw at him. Who's the best option? And Dan, I'll ask you.
Unless it's Michael Arhart. I mean, it's clearly him. If it was just them two one-on-one, then Earnhardt, I think, wins that matchup. He can shut most everyone down with his physique and just cover ability. But the fact of the matter is that's not the case with the Chaos offense. They're going to do two-man games and other things to get them free. And especially when if they're going to press out too much on you, like you saw against the Atlas, then they're just going to cut and put it right on their ears with those fantastic dimes and score inside.
I think you hit the nail on the head. He's a total matchup problem. He's somebody that if I ask you right now, you know, just yes or no, is he a dynamic lethal scorer? I think all three of you guys would say yes. If I ask you right now what his point distribution is, I think the instinct would be that he has more goals than assists. And in fact, he's actually doubled up his assist numbers than his goals. Like, he's a tremendous feeder. And so he's a guy that demands a lot of respect as a scorer because, like you said, Kevin, he's really accurate. And so he's shooting at 32%. Which is somebody that you need to slide to, especially if they're getting to dangerous spots. But when you do have to slide to him, he's a tremendous feeder and he's really accurate with those, and he sees through and he throws skips, or he jams, you know, Cloutier inside, or he can jam Josh Byrne inside. And all these guys that he is feeding, all these Canadians behind it, are so slick and finish so well that, you know, it makes for something that's really dangerous. And it's like you said, Kevin, it's not just a one-on-one matchup. It's not like you can just go put your best pull on them and hope that you don't have to slide, because they're going to go send picks to him, and he's fast enough that if you try and play him all the way out by the sideline, he can go by you. He's long enough and strong enough that if you try and play him in like a tight location in tight spots, then he can use his body. So he's definitely a matchup nightmare. It'll be interesting to see how they plan to guard him. I guess you just have to, you know, try and force him underneath, force him to low percentage locations, low angles, and then slide if you have to. But if you do, then make sure you're buttoned up.
Is the Whipsnakes defense as good as it has been the past 2 years?
No. No.
I don't think so.
No.
We were chatting about it last week, Matt. I think Tyler Warner leaving is a bigger miss than perhaps we realized.
Yeah, and we've seen a decline, too, in the production of all the other Shoreswick D-Middies. Obviously, Matt Abbott has helped with that. Yeah. But, I mean, this is a team that, you know, this is now – super old news. This is a team that traded for Chris Hogan because they needed a bigger body. You know, I mean, yeah. Obviously he's now catching touchdown passes in the NFL, so different priorities. But if you just look at where they had stockpiled talent at the beginning of the season and what has happened since, it's very different. It's a tale of two very different teams, very, very different defenses. And, you know, it was either Kevin or Matt making the point earlier that they could get back and stuff transition. They did a good job of that early in the season and recently in the playoffs. But again, I can't forget watching them get smoked with over the top balls in the games where they got blown out. Like, Wibbs got blown out this year. Wibbs got blown out by the Chrome. Did that not happen?
That happened.
And it happened because of their short stick demonies, straight up. And their polls put that crap in that game. So it's not like the air of invincibility, I think, is very much gone. I think it's very much gone for the Whipsnakes. That doesn't mean they're not excellent. It just means like, oh, well, if we swing this sword hard enough at this little spot in the armor, we can get through now. We can cut off their elbows. You know, we can get right to them. We can get to the marrow of this team, and we can make it a fight. And unfortunately for the Chaos – or for Whipsnakes fans, they're playing the Chaos, who love to find those little spots and exploit them. And the thing about, you know, we were talking about Dane Smith earlier really quickly. When he originally came into pro outdoor lacrosse, he was on the Rattlers, and they deployed him completely wrong. They put him on a high crease and tried to force the ball into him so he could turn and shoot. And that's the opposite of what he does now, right? Like, he is now a guy that comes from that high wing triangle and tries to draw double or surveys the defense and passes it on, gets it back, sees what they're going to do a second time, and then makes the decision. Like, he's very cerebral. He's very intelligent with the ball. And that's why you see, even compared to last year, his point totals are much higher, because he's now adapted his game to the speed of the PLL and found an ability to take games over with his talent to survey the field and distribute the ball.
Yeah, no indoor players ever scored more points in a single season than Dane Smith. So, like, if you're putting him on the crease and expecting him to just catch and shoot, like to your point, it's definitely utilizing him in all the wrong ways. And
to be fair, that team was loaded with dudes. They didn't know where to put him. It wasn't that that was the only place they could put him. They're like, go on the crease? Go on the crease. Let's try that. Let's just try that.
Well, especially with his, like, he played a little field in 2013, I think he said, and coming in for his real first, like, extended field experience, like, you're going to eat him into it. So, I mean, it all makes sense, his evolution into what he's become at the field level, but Colin Squires, just for the Whipsnakes defensive discussion, I think has been really good and a bright spot for them, which I didn't expect, because he is playing a lot up top, whether that be the kind of O mid that's really just an attackman on the other team, and they say, hey, Colin, you guard him, or actual midfielder. I think he's done really well.
His foot speed's really good.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know he was that fast.
Which
I watched him at Denver. Like, asked me who was he shut everyone in the Big East down, but I just think he's transitioned to become a foundational piece of that defense.
Which is interesting, because if at the beginning of the year you had asked me who would be filling that role, I would have said actually plays for the Crow now in Nick Bill. I thought that he would have been, you know, awesome in that second LSM spot, but Colin obviously, you know, did the work to beat him out. That's why he's still there.
Yep.
All right, guys. I think it's time to make some predictions. So first off, what do you think? Kyle, you just chuckled there. You're not into it?
No, well, I famously hate making them, but I always expect to make them. I did promise Andy Towers that I would pick against them to give them a better chance to win. I promised him. I was like, hey, listen, I picked against you the whole time. I can't pick you now. People are going to know. They're going to figure it out. So I am picking the Whip Snakes. I expect it to be a very close game, and I don't think – what's the over-under?
I think it's 20.
Over-under is 23.5.
That's a good over-under.
Yeah.
I was going to say, right, no matter what it is, hit the under, but I think it's probably around that. I think it's like 12 to 11, maybe 13 to 12, something like that, or 14-12 as a final. Like, I do think it's going to be close. I think there's going to be a lot of – big runs and then some big stops, and we're going to see a ton of just amazing plays and goal scorers going crazy, and guys that you never thought would score a goal are going to score in this game. That's my prediction.
Yes.
But I am taking the Whip Snakes probably by like two.
I'm chaos and hit the over.
I think I'm going with the under with it being exactly 23, like Kyle said, like a 12-11, or even if it's like a 4-point game, because I think Whip Snakes safe bet -155 for the money line, spread is -1.5 for in their -110 favorites for that. I'm gonna go smash the Whips.
Yeah, I'm taking the Whip Snakes, guys.
Wow, such conviction.
I'm going for the three-peat, and I don't know how much I'm convinced that they are going to win or that I want them to win, more that I'm ready for the heel chaos to lose. So you put that in writing for me. Right?
Did you guys know that Dan Kaplan's favorite superhero is Superman? He revealed that to me in an email a couple weeks ago, and that is very Superman pick to always go with the side of the three-peat and the side of the good.
If anybody in the league is going to be kryptonite, though, I think it would be the chaos. So wow. This isn't a good matchup.
Hedging your bets.
Good hedge.
You know, he's
a defensive guy. He loves to hedge.
You set me up.
I'm going to take it a step further, and I'm saying the chaos, and they win by 3 goals.
Yeah, you've rode the chaos train in this postseason.
You're on the train.
Now, I will say I probably picked against them every game in the regular season. I just didn't think they were good.
Yeah.
They weren't. They had Blaze.
They're the anomaly. They're such an anomaly.
Yeah.
Sometimes the anomalies win championships, right? Like, Yeah, no, go ahead.
If they do win, I will be very happy for Josh Byrne. I like him. I like Josh Byrne a lot. I think he's underrated, like underappreciated, I guess I should say, when you think about like the PLL superstars. He doesn't get as much shine as some of the other ones, but both in statistical like play and just like playing hard and playing with heart, like I think he's right up there. So if the chaos do win and I'm wrong about that, I will at least be happy for Josh Byrne.
Yeah. In sports history, what's the comparable franchise to the Chaos versus the Whips?
Oh, man.
Good question.
Well, I mean, like, what's the defining?
I guess, like, underdog powered by a defensive player. Is it, like, the Pistons? Like, I don't know who that, like, what the analog is. I'm just curious what you guys would pop into your head. I'm trying to think.
Like what? Which Pistons? Like the
like Ben Wallace Pistons.
Okay, I was gonna say like, or are you talking
Rip
like
Hamilton Pistons?
The yes. Michael Jordan era, like you know Pistons versus Bulls era Pistons. Are you talking about Malice in the Palace Pistons?
Oh yeah, Malice in the Palace, 100%. That's the chaos to me.
Is Jack Rowlett Bill Laimbeer?
Yeah, I mean you could go either way. There was bad, quote unquote, bad guys on all those teams, but
right
or bad dudes, I should say, but. You know, the Whipsnakes, I think, are like, they really are. They're a little bit Golden State Warrior-y, a little bit.
Sure.
You know, they've got a little bit of that swagger, that shine that, you know, I think the coach is way more cantankerous than anything Steve Kerr's ever approached. But.
Am I just showing my colors here by saying it is the Baltimore Ravens?
I was thinking about that. I was going to say it.
First Super Bowl team, 2000?
Yeah. I was waiting for you to do a hockey one, to be honest.
Yeah. Trying your true colors would have been a hockey comparison.
Yeah. I want a hockey.
Little Terry Collins.
I mean, like, I don't know. That's a good – it's a good question in terms of, like – but I feel like those teams don't win. Like, I guess it comes down to if they win or lose. Who are they?
Right.
If they're the team that keeps falling up short, that's one conversation. If they're the team that broke through, they're the Ravens. You know, like.
If the Whips lose and they're like the Golden State dynasty, then who's going to be the team and call for Durant to come over?
That fits a little too well. I'm a little uncomfortable with how well that fits.
Rambo in the parking lot calling Rabel out of retirement.
I just feel dirty talking about it now. I don't know. Yeah, those are my comps. They're hoop comps. I don't even have old lacrosse ones. Like I think probably the Barrage are the closest thing to the Chaos. You know, those double teams with where Boyle was like, you know, being a playmaker, but also like making good decisions to make sure they didn't turn the ball over. But the defense is the thing that really won them championships. So I think that's the closest comp for Chaos.
I mean, lacrosse, I kind of get a Yale vibe.
Defensively, well, before the college comparison, I heard it floated out there on Twitter. It's like the Hamilton Nationals kind of on the offensive end, and then you go, you can stick Barrage maybe.
2009? Yeah, that's a good comp. I mean, that's pretty accurate. I think that team was – oh, man. Canadian Twitter is going to hate me even more than they already do. That team was pretty overrated. Denver choked that championship away. I'm going to be real with you. Denver choked that away. Do you know who was on that Denver team? Kyle Harrison, Max Seabold, Lee Zink, Jesse Schwartzman, all these dudes. It was like legendary. It was like the absolute top of the heap. And then they're just like, champion. Sorry. Too bad. I actually talked to Harrison about it when he retired. He was like, yeah, I think about that sometimes. You know, like you can tell, kind of didn't want to talk about it. I was like,
Well, because remember, that became the thing of his career before he won with the Machine. Like,
yes.
He never won it. He never won, you know, the pro championship.
Yeah. I feel like that's the narrative with like so many players that are stars. Like, is that Josh Burns' narrative?
Well, I feel like it was Rabel's narrative, but he was only in the league like what, 3-4 years when like the Cannons won.
4 years. So, like,
people are a little quick to jump to that, like, oh my gosh, they haven't won the big one yet, like
because he was so dominant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those people are us, by the way. Yeah. That's our fault. Like that's our fault. Sorry, Josh Byrne, for just naming you as one of those people. If you don't win, but if you do win, congratulations, you're officially not one of those people. So. I don't know. I think it's definitely – there's so many great storylines in this game. I think it's – you know, the rematch aspect of it is great. I also think if this game – you know, if the semifinals went different and we had Water Dogs Atlas, we'd just be, like, exploding with, like, talking about offense the entire time. And instead, we're talking about defense the entire time. So what does that tell you? You know, it tells you that is an aspect that really matters in professional lacrosse, which is what everyone's criticism – a professional lacrosse was is forever is that defense that no one plays defense. No. 2021.
Well, I'm excited. It's there's you know, and we're recording this when we started this talking about Paul Rabil. There's tremendous personality in this game.
Yeah.
I think that this is the matchup that gives you the most characters. If you're looking at it as a WWE event, main event, this is the best one. You got Andy Towers is probably the biggest personality, but every one of those guys has the same personality as him to some degree. And then, you know, just the goofiness, but also like the goofiness, but then the weird, like assassin, like focus when it comes to the right time of Matt Rambo is just another, like, he's just another person, one of the better personalities in the game. So I'm really pumped to showcase all these guys on NBC in the championship. I hope we were talking about like fake prop bets. And one of them was how many Andy Towers expletives get through the censors on live national television.
Whatever it is, hit the over.
Yeah, take the over on that. They're going to build in like a 30-minute delay on this thing so that they can study every time they're in the huddle. But it's going to be – I don't think you would get just a more interesting look, feel, kind of overall package to the championship as you would with this game right now.
Let's go. I'm pumped.
And then if you're listening to this, Chris Rosenthal has not submitted it, but he's got a preview coming up that is going to be as epic as his one of using Omar quotes from The Wire. It is talking about sequels and how tough it is for the third sequel to measure up in movie franchises, you know, as the Whipstinks go for their three-peat. So we had a long Die Hard conversation via text today where, you know, when we're talking about that was a rare case where the third one was better than the second one.
Yeah, that's fair. I that breaks my heart. I was not in that conversation, to be honest with you. I'm pretty devastated that that's what he went with, but devastated in a great way that now I get to read it. So
well, to be fair, you'll probably get he's going to submit it to be posted Saturday morning. So to be fair, you'll probably get a text message around 12:30 tonight going into it. Like, all right, what's this Godfather comparison that I'm doing here?
Oh yeah. That happens sometimes. The Omar one was still chef's kiss. I loved it. So good. And hey, if you're listening to this now, you're going to watch the championship game. I am going to be on Riding the Line on the PLL Spaces, previewing the game, previewing some of the prop bets we talked about here. And yeah, you can catch me on Twitter at the Kyle Devitt, also on Instagram, and write for New England Lacrosse Journal, laxjournal.com.
Awesome. Everyone have a fun weekend. Enjoy the games. Watch the games. If you're in the DC area, go to the games. But if you cannot make it, be sure to turn on your TV and tune in and support pro lacrosse and enjoy pro lacrosse. It's going to be an awesome game. There's no reason not to. So take care, everyone, and we will talk to you all after the championship.
Bye. It's so weird.